it's your body. You practice a trigger so that you and your mind are imagining that calm state for you. And it can be other things. So some people can say, I'm not good at something like that. When I'm in the moment, I'm just, yeah. I'm frozen. Well, maybe then remove yourself. The boss is yelling and you say, you know, I'm so sorry, but I need to use the ladies' room. I'll be back in a minute. You know, right? Break the connect. Why don't we feel like we can do that?
Wow, that's
break connection.
Yeah, rather than the deer in the headlights. By the way, Bev, we're being featured on Blog TV. So would you like to say hi to the people on Blog TV?
Hello, everybody.
Okay, so you viewers are here, and you're obviously tuning in and listening to this very interesting and helpful talk with practical solutions from Beverly Flaxington about coping mechanisms that aren't going to leave you spent and depleted if you work in an environment where, you know, you still need the job, you still need the money coming in, and therefore it is prudent and practical to stay. And Bev's talking about the mechanisms or tips and tricks that you can use to keep yourself not only sane, but actually you can leave your office at the end of the day with a smile on your face, okay, despite whatever goes on in the day. So if you have any questions for Bev, please Skype in and tell us. So we'll answer it on air now. So you folks out there, I know you're watching, so pay attention. Now, Bev, just coming back to you now. In terms of also creating the bubble and breaking the cycle, what I'd like to sort of get you to talk about is also the fact that when you're talking to people who run or own businesses and you hear from their vocabulary certain words that come out that seem to indicate that they have a lack mentality, a paranoid mentality, work is a struggle, the other guy is always out to get me kind of thing, and I got to get in there first. How can you actually turn that around and make them consciously aware that what you put out is what you get back?
Well, you know, the truth is, I'm not sure that we can ever make someone aware. What we can do is we can take some steps to perhaps be able to be almost sometimes a mirror to them or a reflection back to them. A lot of times how I will handle somebody who seems as though they want to stay stuck is to start asking some questions. You know, is the behavior you're using getting you what you want? Is the response that you're getting what you were hoping to get? You know, could there be a different way to put some different energy out there and get something back in return? Now, I believe that you do have to, I call it the aha. And I think the mistake we make is that we tend to want to get someone to see the light, right? So we talk to them and we tell them this is what they should do. But I think that aha often comes from asking them the questions and allowing them to see something inside where they make a different choice and say, well, maybe I do want to learn more about that, or maybe there is something to that. So I'm a big proponent of the questions, because I think people do have to come to it. You know, that awareness, that desire to look at it differently and get a different response. There's that definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different response. So a lot of times I will say to people, do you like what you have here? I mean, are you happy with what you're getting? Because if you're happy, we have no reason to talk. But if you're not happy, then let's look at what's gone wrong. Wow. So I think that probing and that questioning is a really good way. But look, Luann, the truth of the matter is there's plenty of people who want to believe it's somebody else that's the problem. And it's forces out there. And they don't want to see that they have as much ability to influence as they do.
Right. And also, it sort of leads into the next question. When you're talking to these people who are, you know, feeling they're in an intractable position, do you find that sometimes you feel as though you're talking to a 5-year-old?
Well, it's kind of funny. I have a client who once told me that what I was actually doing in life was trying to teach everyone how to be more like a five-year-old, because I want people to ask questions, you know, the why and what's underneath that and, you know, learning. So there's an aspect where I think we'd be better off if we could get back to a little bit of that inquisitiveness and that curiosity that we have as children. But in many cases, yes, there's that sense of the tantrum, or the my way, or, you know, I want it to be the way I want it to be. And the problem is, as I do try to say to people, but what if we all took that position and we disagree on the way it should be? You know, that makes for a very difficult living situation together. So we do all have to be able to at least understand where the other person is coming from, if not sometimes give a little bit in those relationships. But I will go back to saying, people, I think, have to make a choice. Am I happy with where I am, what I have, how it's working? If you are, great. If you're not, then you do have to think about and ask, what can I control? What could I do differently?
That's very interesting. And you said asking powerful questions will get to the aha moments. So, look, I'm a fan of the saying, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. So when you have your clients going through this process of you know, gently in asking those questions, do you find that they come up with very unhelpful and really self-limiting beliefs around money that they picked up as they were when they were kids?
Oh, without a doubt. In fact, I think so much of, you know, let's go back even to that example of the boss. I mean, is that boss probably living out something, the guy that was yelling, the way he was treated as a child, or what he saw his parents do? I think so many of us have developed these beliefs and these ways of looking at life and the way we think about ourselves, and based on the messages that we heard from our parents, what we might have lived with. And money, I think, is a big one. You think about, you know, I once read, and I'm very conscious of this with my children. So when you have children, you're germ phobic, right? There's germs everywhere. So one of the main places you get germs is coins and dollar bills. And think about the number of people that touch those. So we're taught money is dirty, quote unquote. And you think about it, what the parent's trying to say is a lot, and that's what I try to say to my kid, a lot of people have touched that coin, so make sure you wash your hands after you touch it. It's not the money that's dirty, it's the germs on the money. But it's things like this where we don't even realize that we've been given these messages, and that somehow, or that money is bad, or a lot of times I'll have situations with people who are in business and they don't have that ROI value. They value something else. So they think earning a lot of money is, I'll use the term, money grubbing. You know, as long as I can just get what I need, more than that is money grubbing. And I'll try to say, but you want to help people think about what you can do with additional money. It doesn't mean you're just going to hold on to it. You can let go of it too. So I think you are right on that. We do need to look at a little bit more about, what did my parents believe? What did they teach me? How did they talk about this? And how can I shift the way I talk to myself about it, so I'm not inadvertently falling into that trap?
Yeah. Do you then say to those people who say, what do I need extra money for? One thing that comes to mind is that you can employ more people. And that's another person who's not on the dole queue, you know, who's not in the unemployment line.
Well, and the one that I struggle with the most, that I hear a lot, is, you know, people will, and I'm sure it happens in Australia, we've seen it here over the last few years in the U.S., where the economic conditions have not been good. And so there's a lot of sense of, I'm at the mercy of something, that if the economic engine doesn't turn, then I can't possibly be successful. The job market is terrible, or if I'm a small business, the opportunities aren't out there. And I think we know that there are lots of situations of people who thrive under difficult conditions. So how can that be? If the conditions are what cause the difficulty, how can it be that anyone is succeeding? So really challenging yourself to say, where am I holding myself back? Key area to start, at least.
Yeah, and basically, if anybody's listening to this and resonates with you, how can they get in touch with you, Viv, so that they can get their money mindset straightened out?
The best place is probably my website, which is thehumanbehaviorcoach.com, because so much of what we're talking about here has to do with human behavior. So it's thehumanbehaviorcoach.com.
Okay. And also in terms of, let's say, a business owner saying, look, I get what you're saying, yet in my immediate area, there aren't these sorts of people who've got the same outlook and mindset, and they're all whinging about how bad the economy is, but I want to see and I want to know that I can actually make a profitable business run in this current economic climate. So in that sense, we need to surround ourselves with people who are positive and have a can-do attitude. So what can you suggest to people in terms of getting together a mastermind group, let's say?
I love that. I'm such a big believer in this. You know, you think about the water cooler talk, right? Or I go out to lunch with somebody and I was feeling pretty good before. And then I had lunch with this person. I come back, I didn't realize how terrible my life was. So this is a key area to be able to surround yourself, find people of like minds. I mean, I think that, and I will just say, I think when you put the intention out there, a number of years ago in my business, I had a lot of clients that I found to be very difficult in a lot of different ways. And I realized that my intention around it was not as positive as it should be. So I made an intention. I want to work with people that I genuinely like. I want to help them and have a professional relationship, but I want to genuinely like them. And I set that as a goal. And I have to say that even I am amazed sometimes when I go to a meeting with someone I work with, how I could live with these people. I love these people that I work with. They are genuinely people that I enjoy, that I feel are my friends, that are people that inspire me and help me to be the best that I can be. So I do believe a lot in just putting the intention out there that that's what you want and that that's what you're focused on. Talk to other people about it. Network in the area that you're in. Set a group up on LinkedIn and network and say, I want to create a success-minded group. Things like this. But it is about that intention of wanting it to come about.
Okay, you use the word intention. So when you say intention, do you actually write it down like a goal and be specific about what you want? No wet blankets, basically. Everybody's got to be reasonably positive, yeah, and very encouraging and supportive of everybody else in the group.
Absolutely. I call that specifying your desired outcome. Painting the picture of what is it that you want. You know, we are so often, and we don't realize it, we're thinking about what we don't want. We're thinking about what we want to move away from. We're thinking about when things change. And we're not really painting that picture of, well, what do you want? You know, I want to make more money. I want a lot of money. Well, what kind of money? How much money? Where do you want that money to come from? What kinds of things do you want to do with that money? You know, the more you can really invest yourself, I'll use a money term, in really painting that picture, you know, really getting clear on what it all looks like, the more drawn you will be to it. So I think a really important first step.
Okay, so this is sort of overlapping into that realm of the esoteric law of attraction type scenario, isn't it?
Well, it is, which I always feel that I live in two worlds because my corporate clients are very buttoned down corporate. And then, of course, my my other side of life is very much, you know, what can be. So I'm always trying to pull those two together and figure out how do we teach people who may not have learned to think a little bit differently, that there is a whole other world to think about out there.
Okay, right. So this is... They're not, to me, they're not separate. They can be integrated, and it's to be open-minded enough to accept and then put it into your working life, your business life, your personal life, that it's where it really, really works. So this is where we touch on the what I call success rituals, because part and parcel of the metaphysics is that you have these actions that you take regularly, daily. So what are yours to keep you on track to be successful in your professional and your personal life?
So I have a few that I have developed over the years. I am a big proponent. I do write my goals down. If we moved the camera, you would see that all around me are very clear statements of my desired outcomes, as well as pictures and whatnot to remind myself. But then I also am very disciplined about setting the goals that I want to get to, and then working to figure out how are those going to really fit into my daily life. So what's going to impact what? So in other words, if I care about spending time with my children, but I also want to take on a new project, how are those two going to impact one another? So I've really learned not to just look at one goal, but to try to look at the whole of me, all of who I am, and all of the pieces that fit together. And so I was never a planner or somebody who was really good with writing everything down, but I've become very good at it so that I can understand where am I going to be able to find time for different things. And what was very important to me was I always would have an attitude, because I'm very busy and I have my children, that there were passions that I had and that those would have to wait until everything else was done. And so I decided I wanted to integrate my passions. And so I do things like once a week, I'm very big in animal rescue. So once a week I go and I clean dog cages at the shelter. We take in foster animals that live with us while they're waiting for homes. I, you know, walk my dogs. So it just became very important to start to pull pieces into my life of what I value and what I care about, and to make that all work.
Okay, so it's basically a holistic approach that it's not all about business, or it's not all about the family, to the point where you've lost your identity within being, you know, quote unquote, a mother. You're still a human being with your own wants and needs and intellectual pursuits that need to be filled. Yeah?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because I do hear women talk about balance, you know, that elusive balance. And I think that's a setup. I was a big gymnast when I was younger, and I can't help but always get the sense of the balance beam that you used to have to, you know, very carefully walk on. And if you stepped the wrong way, you were on the mat. I don't think we can get balance. I think that we have to look at all of the pieces of who we are and what we care about. And we just have to get somewhat disciplined and thoughtful so that we're not always so reactive, but that we are more steering our boat where we'd like it to go, instead of always feeling like we're fighting the storm and we're just trying to get it to, you know, stay upright. So I think that consciousness that you talk about, being conscious about it, is a very key piece to help you shift how events unfold.
Okay, so you're actually touching on what I consider a spiritual aspect of living, and some people will you know, dismiss that totally. I actually believe very much in the spiritual aspect of everything in my life and integrate that in. So do you do things like spend time on your own meditating or contemplating?
So I've found that for me, I'm deeply spiritual. And I've found for me the type of meditation and thoughtful time is more, I like to get out and walk. And so what I do is I actually practice, you know, walking and just seeing the thoughts that are coming and emptying my mind. And so I've not been as good at sitting quietly, but when I'm moving, I'm able to do that. Another practice that I have, and I attribute this, I listen to a spiritual teacher called Guy Finley, and he talks about deliberately slowing down. And so that's when I practice a lot, when I'll find myself, I'm rushing out the door for a meeting, or the kids have, you know, called me and said, you've got to pick me up right away. And the immediate reaction is, rush to it. And I just deliberately, with thanks to one of the talks I once heard him say, I slow it down. And it's just amazing how differently everything looks when you do that. So I try to do those throughout the day.
Okay, so it's called, I think the term is mindfulness. Be deliberate in everything you do, including making a cup of coffee and tasting the coffee rather than shoving a donut and coffee down your gob and you're out the door. So this deliberate mindfulness is your type of meditation, which, well, folks out there in Blog TV land, that might appeal to you rather than the other sort, which is to sit quietly, which is what I do, because, you know, it's just nice to have that stillness. Whereas for you, this works for you, and it's a practice you can integrate into your life, and nobody has to know.
Well, that's the fun, is that I will sometimes be, you know, with someone or doing something with my children, and maybe the pace is getting very frenetic because somebody's got to be at a dance class and another one has to be dropped off here and something else is going on there. Meantime, I have a client who's waiting for me to call them back. And of course, I also teach. So there's 200 students sending me emails, and, you know, and it will start to build. And right in the middle of that, I can decide, I'm going to slow down here. I'm going to slowly take a look through these emails. I'm going to slowly respond. And you do get this realization, it will all get done, and there's absolutely no need to give out that kind of energy. So I think it's actually a wonderful practice for busy business people, because I think it helps me be more effective at what I'm doing instead of haphazardly just running from thing to thing.
Yeah, so really it's something an employee who's getting yelled at can actually do in the course of being yelled at, so that they're there but they're not there, kind of.
Exactly. And I've had, you know, I told you the story about the client, so I'll be honest, I haven't had one like this in a few years, but I did have a number of them that were yellers. And I just used to think of it as, well, this will be a challenge. You know, is this a client that I can make happy? Because this person is just furious for whatever it might have been, partially something perhaps we did, partially something that was their history. So it's funny because those people in every case, if I wanted to give a reference, would be the people that would say, you know, the most wonderful things about us. So if you can keep yourself calm and let yourself focus on what's really happening here with this person, you may actually find that you'll have a friend, because not enough people are empathetic and compassionate. And we really gravitate to those people who are.
That is a very salient point, and makes you unfireable.
I will say we've been very blessed. I do not take full credit, but everyone we work with comes back time and time again, and we've been very blessed. I love what I do. I feel very lucky to get up every morning, so I'm very thankful.
Yeah, and you're right, you're saying that people will gravitate towards, it's almost like there's a storm out there, and they will gravitate towards a person who's basically exuding calm, peace, and common sense.
I love that. I might make that our new tagline. Calm, peace, and common sense. You would love this, though, how many times someone will say, especially if, let's say, we're doing coaching or we might be doing a meeting and we're talking to people beforehand, and they will say, it just feels so good to have someone understand me and listen to me. And that always makes me so sad. I mean, I'm happy that we can be that, but so sad that they're not getting that anywhere else in their work life. And we're that one place that they can come and talk about what's going on and feel like someone's understanding.
Yeah, it's like almost like a refuge where you can just escape for a little while. So as a takeaway for business owners, do you think, if anything else, if they stopped yelling for a minute and all they did was listen, shut their mouth and open their ears, it would actually increase the retention rate of their employees?
Listening, and I think listening with that active desire, I want to learn, I want to understand what obstacles my employees are up against, and I don't have to take on those obstacles as being a reflection that I'm wrong or I'm bad or I've done something, I can take them as facts and data that give me something to work with in my business so that we can all be more successful. It's a mind shift. It really is just a mind shift. Makes a huge difference, though, I think, in that business owner's ability to have a breakthrough and change things.
And so would you actually run courses of the business owner with their employees together, or would you do that separately?
So most of the time what we will do is we will have the business owner there to do what we call a kickoff and say, I support this. We just had one last week, wonderful session. Business owner came in and said, I support this, but I want you to be honest. I want you to work these things through. So we went through the session with the employees, and then the business owner came back in. And that person had to listen, and in a lot of cases, it was a woman. She began to get kind of defensive, and then we would say, this isn't about you. And she would say, you know what? That's true. I'm getting defensive. I need to drop my defenses. And they ended up coming out with an amazing plan to be able to put in place. So I think that's the best way to do it. Let the business owner leave, let the employees work some things out, but then come back and present it, realizing that now we're all collaborating together and we're all trying to figure out how do we make this better. So I don't believe it should be on the person in charge solely. It's not on the employees solely. It's on those two groups working together to figure out how do we harness all our resources and make this work.
Mm. That is really the next step in the evolution, I think, of the corporate culture, which currently for many organizations is adversarial. There is, you know, there's management and there are the plebs, yeah? And never, twain shall never meet in the middle and be helpful to each other. You use the word collaboration. You know, you think about it, it is an organization. Everyone wears the same uniform, ultimately.
And I think really, haven't you keyed on something? It's like the word mother-in-law, right? So, you know, there's certain relationships that you look at and it connotes. I mean, why is it that boss and subordinate, boss and employee, we think of these as divided? These people are on the same team. They're all, in theory, striving for that same goal. So, you know, building those bridges and figuring out how do we understand one another better and put plans in place we can work together, that only helps everybody, and it sure as heck helps the business.
Mm, definitely. And there are organizations out there where people can model along the lines of how employees and employers interact so that you get the best possible outcome. So it's not pie in the sky theory, it actually works. And these are businesses that are very profitable, as you know, because you step in and out of those. So we're just running out of time at the moment, but I'd like one last question, and that would be really, you know, when it's all that's said and done, what would you want to be remembered for? What is your legacy?
Well, I have to admit that the first thing I would say is that I raise children who are conscious, who are contributing, who are compassionate and joyful. So that is my number one goal. But second to that is that I have a deep desire to be able to take concepts and translate them into workable ways that people in business can take these ideas, use them, and be able to rise to their own level of effectiveness. So it's not me doing something, it's me giving someone a tool or a direction or an idea that they can take it and say, wow, I changed that. You know, I did that. Mm-hmm. That's what I would love my legacy to be.
Oh, that's wonderful. So just as a final, where can we get your book, Make Your Shift? Could you just hold it up so that people know it's a real book?
Sure. I will, let's see if I can I get this in? Here we go.
Yeah,
so there
okay.
It is. It's a real book, although that's my media kit that I'm showing you, but it's on Amazon. It's actually a best-selling book. It did reach bestseller status. It's on Amazon.com and BN.com and all of that. It's also at my own website. And lots of other books that I've written as well on some of these topics.
Okay, so for all you out there who are interested to know more about what Beverly does, and obviously she's a bit of a miracle worker, a rainmaker, and she gets people happy again in their jobs, which is most important at this time, because I think at the end of the day, you got to enjoy what you do. Getting paid for it extra is kind of like the bonus, but in yourself intrinsically, knowing that you're satisfied with the quality of work you're doing, and you have workmates around you who think along the same way, and a boss who's supportive, that's the ultimate for lots of people, that they're in a happy working environment. So once again, just give us your website so that people know where to get in touch with you, Beb.
It's just thehumanbehaviorcoach.com, www.thehumanbehaviorcoach.com.
So it's thehumanbehaviorcoach.com.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Okay. So thank you very much, Beverly, for spending this hour with us. It's been inspirational, and there have been lots of meaty, useful suggestions that people can implement straight away to increase their business profits and have happy employees. Start 2013 in a way that's never been before, and that is to not only increase profits, but have happy employees and happy employers. So on that note, thank you very much, Beverly. God bless, and we'll see you soon.
God bless. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome.
Today's podcast is brought to you by ObesityHotline.com, the silent killer.